Hey, Bobby Manning here. Welcome to Dome Theory 101. Got a good episode coming up with Wes Goldberg, who we've brought on pretty regularly to talk Heat. Celtics just off their mini series with the Heat last week. An interesting one where Jimmy Butler came back. They looked pretty stable in that second game. He made some ridiculous plays down the stretch to beat what's obviously been a historic Celtics team to start this year. They also defended well enough to force, I believe, 36 turnovers over two games. A Celtics team that, beyond the great shooting, didn't turn the ball over that much before that series. So we got into the Heat after a bad loss on Wednesday in the first half of that miniseries. And as I record this, they lost to the Pistons today and continued to lag behind the East best. They were the one seed a year ago and pushed the Celtics to the brink in that East final series. Pretty much the same team. Victor Oladipo comes back tonight. He had another weird injury to start this year. Doesn't play until this loss. Butler in and out of the lineup. Tyler Herro a starter now. Max Strus off the bench. You have all this weird dialogue going into the season between ownership, front office, Eric Spoelstra and Kyle Lowry about his shape. And he didn't start the season that great either. Bam, going back and forth with officials. Every time I've seen the Celtics and Heat play, he's wrapped up in the officiating. Though he's played good this year. Odd situation. Then you look up, it's Jamal Cain, it's Orlando Robinson, it's Haywood Highsmith. Guys you normally see stepping up for them in the past, playing okay. And then those two-way guys, I don't really know what you can expect out of them if they're playing regular minutes for you. I think the Heat are just digging a little bit too deep now. I think the talent pool has diminished for them. I think they're more reliant on Butler than ever. It makes you ask, what's next for that group? Are they gonna stick around and try to pester the Bucks, Heat, Sixers, those type of teams this year? Or are they gonna fall out of contention here and get stuck in the middle of the league? Or do they make that tough decision to take a step back, to make a step forward into the future? That's where they stand. That's what we're going to talk to Wes Goldberg about in this episode. And we're going to show some love to betonline.ag, the best place to go get your sports info this time of year where there's World Cup continuing to progress along. You can go over there and get futures, four of them. Right now, Brazil plus 170 win it all. You got France, Argentina plus 425, plus 600. The long shots, Croatia plus 4,000. You got Morocco plus 3,300. And then you got England and Portugal both at 625 right now. Basketball night in and night out. You know that they got you covered there for your information. Celtics surprisingly underdogs against the Raptors the other night. They end up, I believe, 3 or 4 point winners in that game. An interesting line to me. First time, I think, this year the Celtics were underdogs. You got hockey rolling along. Bruins, unbelievable right now. And all of that is available over at betonline.ag. So BetOnline, you know I've been telling you about them forever. This great website where you're not only getting your sports odds information, live betting, a little bit of everything available to you over there, you are also getting access to live casino games. You can get player news, game trends. It's all available over there. Tennis, boxing, golf as well. It's just a great site to visit if you're looking for some information or you're looking to make a bet. And if you are, go to betonline.ag and use our code CLNS50 for 50% back on your first deposit. That's CLNS50. BetOnline, where the game starts. Also, big shout out to Athletic Greens, athleticgreens.com/garden. Their powder that you put in your water each morning has vitamins, minerals, adaptogens, probiotics, all that and more. Whole food sourced. Going to give you a boost of energy with a nice tropical flavor. I really enjoy it. Other people do. 5-star reviews up and down. You can go to their website and check those out if you're not buying it from us. But please do buy it from our code, athleticgreens.com/garden. Again, they'll throw in the 5 free travel packs and the year's supply of immune-boosting vitamin D. Shout out to Calm. Calm app. Head over there. calm.com/garden. This app's got sleep sounds, meditation, yoga, more. I know you've used it, but this is a little bit of something for everyone. All in one location, you can run into something you didn't know relaxes you. These guided meditations are great. The calm of the day, midday. Those are great to start your day as well. And those sleep sounds, I use them almost every night going to bed. Rain, the big one for me. And that whole library is 40% off when you go to calm.com/garden. That's calm.com/garden. And new one here, Rocket Money, rocketmoney.com/garden is going to get you caught up on the subscriptions you've been buying. You pretty much go over there and they're going to tell you what you're signed up for, what you're paying. They have some tools for managing your finances as well. It's a great tool, and I've used it in the past. You've probably heard of it. It's a popular app. It's a good one. And they're going to help you get your finances a little bit in control, because those subscriptions, they can get out of control fast. Some of them you get a call up to cancel. Some of them you can cancel quickly, right on your phone. And the most important part is just knowing about it. So go to rocketmoney.com/garden. Give it a try. I think it's worth investing in. It's going to save you some money. And what's better than that with the holidays coming up? Tighten up your belt a little bit before the new year. 2023 on the way. Lots of good dome theories to come. We're going to talk about Warriors before the finals rematch takes place on Saturday. Gonna have some good guests for that one, so stay tuned over on the Salinas Media and Celtics All Access YouTube pages. And pretty good week just passed. Brooklyn, go check out our coverage of Nets Celtics, including the article I wrote talking to Kevin Durant. Got to meet Kevin Durant, told that story on the Garn Report. Talked about my thick ass accent, talked a little college, talked a little of Jason Tatum's growth, and I thought he had some interesting things to say about that that you can go check out at clnsmedia.com, as well as all our great podcasts and content. And of course, yes, we will have coverage of Celtics Warriors, Celtics Clippers, as well as Celtics Lakers next week. Great road trip ahead. I can't wait for that one. Looks like it's going to be 60 in LA, and I need that because it's raining outside right now. Here is our conversation last week with Wes Goldberg. Hey, Bobby Manning here. Welcome to Dome Theory 101. Welcome back, Wes Goldberg, to the show for one of these mini-series. And I love these. Love to podcast between them. Love when it's between the two teams that faced off in these finals last year. And it lived up to the hype last night. Good national TV showcase between these two teams, even though Jimmy Butler sat. It was a rock fight for most of it, back and forth scoring, high flying affair. It was really good basketball, I thought. And the Heat, to their credit, looked like they could hang with the Celtics offensively for much of this one. So I'll give them credit. I think they're starting to dig themselves out a little bit of a hole early this season. And Eric Spoelstra sounded pretty encouraged by what he's starting to see from this group as well. You got some younger guys starting to emerge in some Heat fashion. So last time we talked, Wes, I was down in Miami. Things seemed pretty dire, and it did kind of get off to that start this season for them. But it seems like things are turning around slowly, at least there.
A little bit, right? You know, I don't. You got to feel good about how they played against the Celtics last night. If you're a Heat fan, just because of how well. Look, the Heat don't shoot like that. No team shoots like that. Even the Celtics, being the best shooting team in the league, they're not shooting almost, you know, 55% overall and 49% from 3-point range every single night. So both teams just had it in them, but you know, it's more expected to get a night like that from Boston than it is Miami, at least offensively. So the fact that they just stepped up and just sort of met the moment in that way speaks to some the resolve that has been characteristic of this team. If they're not as talented as their opponent every single night, They do have that, right? And that's something that they can control, and they show up every game. There's something to be said about that over the course of a regular season. But, yeah, they're getting Jimmy Butler back, expected to be back for Friday night's game. Victor Oladipo started practicing fully for the first time all season, so there's some signs that he could be returning pretty soon. And all of a sudden this team is getting a little bit healthier. Tyler Hero is back. Kyle Lowry looks to be like in good shape, unlike he did at the beginning of the year. So, you know, there are things that you like. They're trending in the right direction. I think they're back in the top 10 in defensive rating, which is good, which is really good news for them, after being, I think, as low as 20 earlier in the season. So things are trending in the right direction. I just don't know what that means and where it is that this team is currently constructed is really going. But this is also a team that was four games below 500. So getting above the 500 mark and getting back into that mix of being a solid playoff team, that should be at least the goal now that that guys are coming back.
Yeah, from the Celtics' perspective, they're probably a team you don't want to see if you don't have to during that playoff run, because they're just the kind of team that's going to extend that series. But from the Heat standpoint of things, like you say, that might be the best you can expect from this group as it looks right now. I'm not expecting Victor Oladipo to come back and change things drastically. He certainly didn't last year once he got going. And all these other guys in the mix here, like, it looks like you know what you have if you're the Heat. And that's the tricky thing, because, yeah, they can look back on that run last year and say, all right, we were three from making the finals, and who knows what happens when we get there against whether they were banged up. Maybe if we're healthy this time around, you know, you can go out there and win the East. We've beaten the Celtics. We've beaten the Bucks in past years. But those teams seem like they're a little bit in the rearview mirror now. And it feels like the Bucks and Celtics have just reached a different stratosphere that this Heat team might not be on par with. Now, they could be. I won't rule that out, but I don't think they are.
Yeah, look, Bam has definitely taken a leap this year. He's been more aggressive with his shot on offense. He's averaging the most points per game that he has all season, or his entire career. He seems just to be more decisive on that end, getting to his spots. He actually knows where his spots are now. So he's definitely taken a leap on offense. Tyler Hero has gotten better as a playmaker. So there's like internal growth things that you like and that this team pointed to going into the season, things that they needed to improve. And those things are clicking. Like, those things are hitting. Caleb Martin has found his voice as a power forward in this kind of weird alignment that they've got set up for him. So there are things that they like there. But, and as good as Jimmy Butler can be, I just don't know that this team has the high-end talent that they're going to need to go up against Boston and Milwaukee, because ultimately you're going to have to play one of those teams at the very least to get through the Eastern Conference. And look, I know that this is also a team that was a shot within making the Eastern Conference Finals, but it also took an historic breakdown by the Boston Celtics at the end of Game 7 to sort of even be to have a chance to take a shot to go to the NBA Finals. So those two things go hand in hand. You can't really expect either of those things to happen again. And so for the Heat, I as close as they were last year, I thought that over the offseason they had to make a major upgrade, and I think they did too based on their actions, like not getting hard capped, keeping all their assets, not using them on little minor rotation guys, and still holding on their assets for a big star. That to me is the only thing between now and the trade deadline that can change things for Miami that would propel them from kind of feisty, plucky playoff team that could give a team like Boston, Milwaukee some trouble potentially, to legitimate contender. I just don't think that they're there yet.
Well, it's startling because this is sort of what the Celtics faced during those Isaiah years, is you got all these up-and-comers, these guys that surprise you, Jay Crowder, Isaiah Thomas, all these different players that are being coached up and rising above their talent level to have this, you know, the magical one-seed season, which is essentially what the Heat had last year. And then you go up against, in the Celtics' case, it was the Cavs with LeBron, and in the Heat's case now, it might be the Celtics with Brown and Tatum, where you look at last night, couldn't have asked for better from Hero. Couldn't have asked for better from Bam. Couldn't have asked much better from Lowry or any of the guys, really. They played a phenomenal game, but they're just unable to stop Tatum. And he's out there just getting whatever he wants. Another one that he can stack up there with his 25 best games, probably 49 points, 12 free throw attempts, 8 of 12 from 3. It was just silly. And Eric Spoelstra after the game was like, all right, zone, man, whatever you want to say, because I was writing about the zone that they've kind of figured out over the years here in Boston on that Miami side. And he's just like, it doesn't really matter what scheme you put in front of a guy like that if he's playing like that. And that just sort of shows you the limitations of Spoelstra and these Gabe Vincent and Max Strus types. Strus, 5 of 6 last night from 3 in that third quarter. Like, that was peak Heat, and it fell 13 points short.
Yeah, look, I mean, they didn't have Jimmy Butler, and that's who you're going to need to guard Jason Tatum, point blank.
Yeah.
Caleb Martin has taken his turn on Jason Tatum. They ultimately went to a zone because they were lacking size and some personnel things. They've been using zone a lot more as a necessity. Like, when Spoelstra first broke out the zone, like, 3 years ago, it was kind of just, like, an interesting thing that he did in the middle of the game just to throw offenses off balance a little bit. It's turned now into basically a necessity that they have to go to on defense because they just don't have the guys with PJ Tucker lost to the Philadelphia 76ers and Jimmy Butler injured. They just don't really have the personnel right now to match up against good offenses. They just simply do not have the guys. And so you just revert back to a zone just to sort of hide your bad defenders that they've been forced to play with. And so I think if Jimmy Butler is in that game, it looks a little bit different for Tatum. I'm not saying that he doesn't have a good game, but he also doesn't score 49 points. I think it looks different for a lot of different guys too. But also, like, looking ahead to Friday night, you can't expect Haywood Highsmith to make 4 3-pointers Friday night. That's as many four. He walked into the arena Wednesday night having made 4 3-pointers all season. He walked out of the arena having made 4 3-pointers in that game. That's wild. That's a crazy stat. You think that that 3-point shot is going to come along, but this is not a Heat podcast. And nobody cares about Haywood Highsmith. So he's not going to do that. You can't get a shooting performance like that overall. What did they shoot? 45% from 3-point range. That's just not going to happen
right
for
there.
This team again. But they need to turn it a little bit. They need to take the game into the mud the way that they did in the Eastern Conference Finals. And that's when I'll be interested to see how the Celtics respond. This is a much different Celtics team than it was last year. That losing in the finals to the Warriors seems to have changed something with this group. But if the Heat are going to win one of these games, and it's going to have to be Friday night, that's what it's going to take, I think.
Well, to look back at Butler's impact, I thought the Heat in that second game of the year played the Celtics probably as well as the Cavs and Bulls did, who are obviously the only two teams that have beaten Boston so far this year. Right. So they brought that game into the mud pretty well, but the Celtics still adapted pretty well in that game and were able to hit the glass and pile up stops and do the different little things that they needed in that game. They've really frustrated Bam too, which I've been impressed by. Like you said, I think Bam's at another level this year in terms of his aggression. He was owning Horford with that jab step for parts of that game last night, but even at the end, he's still out there getting ejected at the end. I remember in that game in Miami, he was running into some foul trouble and kind of jarring with the refs and stuff like that too. So this is a guy that gave Boston fits early in Tatum's career. And to see him, I don't want to say neutralized, but frustrated in this matchup, I think says a lot about where these two teams have kind of gone since that East Finals. Like, I'll throw a football analogy out there, like Brady and the Ravens. Like, there were all those years where Brady just hit a wall against those teams, and then he finally figured them out one year, and the Ravens were just kind of never an issue for him again. After that, he was just ripping off all those Super Bowls. I don't know where this is going to go, but so much of it's on Butler. Right.
Yeah.
And like
to your point, though, on that, I like the analogy, but you can even stay in the NBA and say the same thing about the Milwaukee Bucks. Right. Milwaukee gets dispatched by the Heat in the playoffs 3 years ago. They come back in the bubble. They come back the next year, sweep the Heat in the first round of those playoffs, end up beating the Phoenix Suns in the finals. I think Miami's legacy, if things don't change in terms of the roster construction, if they're not able to go ahead and make a splashy acquisition for another star, this group's legacy might end up being sort of what the Knicks were for Michael Jordan. They might be what that was for Giannis and for Tatum, for both of those guys. And we might be right now witnessing in the Eastern Conference a great rivalry between Boston and Milwaukee sort of starting to unfold, where it's just these two teams year in and year out sort of battling for the number one spot in the Eastern Conference and the right to represent it in the NBA Finals. I do wonder if that's what the Heat end up being, is just sort of that tough team that pushed both of those stars to the brink and ultimately got them to kind of hit that next level of greatness that they have to hit, that any player and team has to hit in order to win a championship.
Yeah, and Butler is obviously the reason they've been able to do that. He just reaches a new level come playoff time, and you understand him missing these stretches in the regular season to stay fresh, whatever he needs to do at his age and at this point in his career. They'll live with that and, you know, take the standing results with it if they get to the playoffs healthy and he's himself. They're much more dangerous, but you do wonder what you can ultimately build around him at this point, given the different cap commitments that they have. Obviously, the Duncan Robinson contract kind of speaks for itself at this point. Bam's a big contract now. Victor Oladipo is signed for more than I ever could have imagined him being signed for. And you're going to have to pay some of these younger guys too eventually at some point as they continue to overperform here. Like, I wonder if Max Strus is going to be able to stick around in Miami and, you know, some of the other guys like that. You just wonder, like, this is always the discussion for teams like them. You love where you're at. It's really fun. I'm sure the Heat and Miami love where they're at in terms of these last couple of years, making the finals, almost making the finals last year. But what's like the ceiling for this group with Butler? Do you have to add to it? Can they continue to just develop young guys and grow into something a little naturally? It feels like Butler's a little old for that. Bam obviously is on the younger side of things. Like, I'm just wondering how this group's gonna kind of metamorphosize over the next couple of years here. Like, are they gonna keep pointing up, or are they gonna have to kind of take a step back here to take a step forward?
That's the big question, right? And I think this is the final kind of season of whatever version of the Heat this is. Not to say that Jimmy Butler won't be a part of it going forward, but look, this is a team that wants to find a star. They've made that so clear in their offseason moves. If they really thought they were a shot away from making the NBA Finals, they would have had an offseason like the 76ers did, right? Where you're just making little tweaks, PJ Tucker, De'Anthony Melton. You're like, the hell with the hard cap. Let's do it. We don't need first round picks. Let's trade them because we're so close. We just need these little pieces to put us over the hump. The Heat did not act like that. The Heat acted like they were further away than what happened last year. And so they approached it saying, we need Kevin Durant. We need Donovan Mitchell. We need another star next to Jimmy Butler. So I think if between now and basically the start of next season, that star trade doesn't materialize, then you do have to think about maybe going the other way and trading Jimmy Butler and Kyle Lowry and some of these vets. You could still hang on to Bam and Tyler Hero. They're young guys and building blocks. But, you know, I think, you know, plan A, try to find that star that you could pair next to this team and sort of make, you know, Jimmy Butler's still your number one. Can you get another guy who's a number two or another like 1B, kind of move Bam down to a number three scoring option, but your top guy defensively, which is probably the better role he's in for a championship team, and then everybody else follows suit. Can you find that guy? And if you can't find that guy, then do you consider, you know what, let's get what we can for Jimmy Butler. Let's get what we can for Kyle Lowry, and then just sort of retool and try to get younger and try to reopen this window. I think that's probably plan B.
And that's a tough decision for a team like the Heat to make. Obviously, the Wizards have struggled to make that decision. There's a number of teams that are still in the middle of the league. The Blazers, to some degree, are still kind of sitting in that spot where you could probably get a haul for these stars. And going, not necessarily tanking, but just piling up picks, selling your guys off, that puts you in such a great position now. You look at the Jazz. Like, I'm not saying the Jazz are going to be winning a championship anytime soon, but that Minnesota trade already looks so good for them. They've already found a new coach that looks amazing, and these different pieces that they might be able to integrate into whatever the next version of their team is. And you have so many options when you get all those picks, and you're quickly assembling young players if you're drafting well in that case. The Thunder look like they're on their way. The Jazz. It's just tough for the Heat and teams like that to kind of swallow their pride and say, all right, we're going to take these couple seasons off, step back, pile up these picks, and do what we need to do here, especially when there's no certainty that that direction is going to work.
Yeah, and Pat Riley's never done that, right? You could make the exception one time. He did it in the season before LeBron was a free agent. But there was a bunch of teams sort of aiming towards trying to get LeBron as a free agent. And he wasn't even tanking. It was just keeping, like, just getting rid of, like, long-term contracts. He didn't necessarily tank that year, even though they were worse than people expected because they had a bunch of injuries, but whatever. The only other time they ever picked a guy in the top five that really made any difference for them was Dwayne Wade. And the only reason they got Dwayne Wade was because Alonzo Mourning had the kidney issue, and then the Heat had to turn around and just figure out how to play a full season. Like, it was just been sort of weird things that have happened that have led the Heat to those moments. And so of getting those kinds of star players, but routinely Pat Riley has always said, you know what, I'm going to go get the guy and just kind of put us in the conversation or just in the mix. And if one thing breaks our way, we're in the NBA Finals. And once you're in the finals, who knows what can happen? And look, they were a shot away from making the finals last year. It would have been their second time in three seasons. They lost to the Lakers in the finals 3 years ago. But I have a hard time seeing this team doing the Utah Jazz thing. They've never done it. Pat Riley wants to leave this team in a great position. I do wonder what that looks like for him. What does a great position look like? Does that mean coming off of a championship with a veteran team that doesn't have much of a window left? Or does it mean Bam Adebayo is defensive player of the year caliber every single year. Tyler Hero is one of the best scorers in the league. We got one other guy and a bunch of picks to sort of build around them. Is that a great position? I don't know, but I just don't see this team going being so bad that they end up being like one of the worst four teams in the league and a chance to get the number one pick in the lottery. I just don't see them going that bad.
No, it's hard to do that too. I mean, the Jazz tried and they're struggling to do it right now, actually bottoming out. So it's to some degree finding the right trade to get years and years of picks. And you could probably potentially do that for Butler, depending on who's looking for a star of his caliber. And now he's not necessarily Rudy or Mitchell, so there'd probably be some difficulty moving him for that level of a price. That route is more foolproof than I think a lot of teams give it credit for right now. Like, it's almost being underutilized, it feels like, in the league. Acquiring all those future picks, stacking up young players, and there's just so much talent coming in the league year in and year out that it can get you back in a good position pretty fast. But there is the Rockets, who are just sitting there in like this really dreary position where like no one's even aware that they exist. And it doesn't look like they have much direction, even though they just bought them out for 2 years. So that's the risk in it, is you become completely irrelevant. And all of a sudden FTX or whatever they're going to call that arena soon is completely empty.
Well, look, you've got some stars in limbo across the league, right? Like, you've got Jimmy Butler, who's a star in limbo. You've got Damian Lillard, who you referenced earlier. Portland Trailblazers, kind of fun, plucky team, but not a championship contender by any stretch. He's sort of in limbo. Luka Doncic right now. Like, who's the second best player on the Dallas Mavericks? He's a little bit in limbo, too, despite it being so young.
Bradley Beal's in that position, too.
It just, if you're an NBA fan, wouldn't you just love to be like, hey, just put all these guys together on a team and let them go make a run? But maybe there's something there where one of them can move and join forces with, maybe it's Damian Lillard and Jimmy Butler together, or Luka Doncic with Jimmy Butler or something like that. Bradley Beal with Jimmy Butler in Miami. Who knows?
Well, that's the advantage Miami still has, is if something like that happens, Miami's the place to go. So that's what they can always rest there.
I keep saying like that Bradley Beal has a no trade clause. And I keep saying, just call it the only anywhere, nowhere else but Miami clause is what I keep calling it. Cause there's been some stuff back and forth with them over the last few years, and I just wonder if Beal does finally decide he wants to get moved, does he try to get his way to Miami? I know the Lakers have been thinking that they're in the running for that, but whatever. But the other like what if Portland offered? Let's say this year goes south for the Heat, like first round exit, second round exit, and it's just sort of clear that they just don't have the gas anymore. Like, and Portland calls over the summer. And Damian Lillard keeps swearing his loyalty to Portland up and down. They're not trading him. They're trying to pair somebody with Damian Lillard, not moving on from him. And Portland calls Miami and they offer Jeremy Grant, Anthony Simons, and whatever it would take. Two first-round picks, three swaps, whatever it takes, picks-wise. If you're the Heat, do you say yes to that? Because now you're not bottoming out necessarily. You're getting two good players, a nice young one in Anthony Simons, and you're getting those picks. That's still a playoff team if you put those guys next to Tyler Hero and Bam Adebayo. I don't know. I wonder. I'm not advocating they do it. I'm just curious, like in a moment of truth, what Pat Riley would actually do in that kind of situation.
That's what I'm talking about, because that can go way better than you expect. Look at the Pacers right now, and they don't have picks lined up, which was what made that Sabonis Haliburton trade that we actually talked about on here last episode a little more fair. Is that no picks change hands? You trade a, I guess, franchise piece in Sabonis for a young guy in Haliburton that Indiana really liked, but he's driving so much success right away that you feel really good about that if you're Indiana, because you found that next guy that you have control of. And Simons could be that guy. I don't like Simons as much as Haliburton, but you can't rule it out if he all of a sudden is in control of his own team and there's good pieces and structure around him. All of a sudden you're talking about a guy like that who is locked up now on a big deal, being the next guy you build around, who's younger, who's going to be around longer, who's a little bit more sustainable. That's what I'm talking about. Like, there's just so much good young talent now that route is almost a little underutilized, because it's a little scary and uncertain. Like, you have this team right now that you know has been good. You don't want to think of anything else but the potential that group could go up here.
Yeah, and I think if you're a team, like, for example, let's look at the last one. The Minnesota Timberwolves, when they traded for Rudy Gobert, that was Utah preying on a team in an area of desperation, wanting to make a splash, and they overpaid for Rudy Gobert, and that's very evident at this point, if it wasn't immediately, which to most people it was. And so that's sort of what we're talking about. Like, Dallas could panic with Luka and say, hey, he's up for an extension. We got to convince him to stay here, just like we went through with Giannis 3 years ago. Milwaukee ends up doing what? They go out and trade a bunch of draft picks for Jrue Holiday. Did they overpay for Jrue Holiday? Yeah, in a vacuum, that was an overpay. But at the end of the day, it made it, it got him a championship and kind of cemented Giannis in Milwaukee. So no, in that respect, it was not an overpay. It was probably an underpay, considering that you're able to keep Giannis, not knowing whether or not he was really ever a threat to walk out the door or not. But that's ultimately what happened. So if you're Dallas, you're kind of trying to make your own Jrue Holiday deal, probably. And I do wonder who that player is. They don't really have a ton of stuff that they can move, but if you're one of these teams with a star in limbo or just an aging core that kind of hit its ceiling or something like that, you're probably looking to sell high on those guys now. And who you're going to sell to, you're going to sell to a team that's desperate, a team that needs to make a move. So whether or not it's Portland trying to surround Damian Lillard with championship talent, whether it's Dallas trying to convince Luka to stay long-term, whether it's Miami thinking, hey, we got to maximize the Jimmy Butler window and give ourselves one more chance and prop this thing open however we can with whatever duct tape and first-round picks that we can find. Who knows? But it does feel like something has to give with some of these other teams around the league, and that includes the Miami Heat.
I cross Luke off. He's signed through 2027. I think the Heat are just so limited in what they could offer, even if he did get to a point where like he pulled a Durant with 4 years left, that yeah. I don't think they're in play just because of Dallas's leverage there. Lillard, I'm believing him that he's sticking out in Portland, so we'll see if that changes. So that does leave like Durant, maybe, if this Nets thing goes in a bad direction. Maybe they can circle back on him. Yeah. Though they weren't in a great spot. Yeah. The thing is, you have to throw in Bam, right?
But you can't. And so that was the sticking point between the Heat and the Nets this past summer too. Is you can't move Bam because now you're completely just you got nothing.
It's just Butler and Durant. Enough. Yeah,
it's just Butler, Durant, and maybe Kyle Lowry. And at that point, I don't know what that window is. So. And you can't technically trade Bam to the Nets while they have Ben Simmons because there's that other roadblock with the contracts, the way that it works out. They're not allowed to have two of those designated players on there. So they would also have to trade Ben Simmons. Nobody's taking Ben Simmons. Nobody is taking that.
Especially now. Yeah.
So the Heat wouldn't take Ben Simmons back, I don't think, in that deal. So and the salaries wouldn't work anyway. But if you could find a way to land Kevin Durant, then that's a name. Bradley Beal, already talked about him. That's the other name. You look at Chicago.
So how does that Beal one work? Because the good thing about Beal is that he's in a place with Washington is if he decides, and we talked about this with Boston when that was kind of a thing, if he decides he wants to go to Miami, they're probably going to play ball and just get what they can get from Miami and make it work for him just because of the loyalty he's shown them. So what does that look like? What's Miami giving up in a deal like that?
Well, I think that it probably – it wouldn't take as much as I think Bradley Beal's actual value is because of the no trade clause. He could basically just say Bradley Beal creates leverage, right? He can waive any trade. So it's basically him saying if he wants to do the Miami Heat, if he wants to end up in Miami, he could say, hey, trade me to the Heat for whatever it is that they offer you. And so look, it's not going to be like Duncan Robinson in a second round pick, but it could be Tyler Hero, Duncan Robinson, and a first or two firsts or something like that, which is way less than what Bradley Beal is probably worth. I don't know. We could debate that. But there is some leverage that could be created there where the Heat can almost have like a Jimmy Butler kind of situation on their hands where you basically are getting Jimmy Butler for, you know, 15 cents on the dollar. And I think that would probably be their hope because if you can swing that kind of deal, this is already sort of a thin Heat roster. You can't really afford to give up a ton. That's what kind of stopped them from getting Durant. And Donovan Mitchell in the first place was that what you would have to give up, what your return is wouldn't make you a championship contender because you would be so thin. So I think that would be the idea for the Heat. That to me is probably their best case scenario. But that's all speculation. You don't know if it's going to happen. So
and I like the sound of that. It depends where Beal's going. He's had such a weird year, and I know he's coming off the injury, but seeing him a couple of times in Boston so far, he gets going late in the games. They're really behind. And it's tough to judge watching the Celtics every night because they're just so dominant and they're mowing over all these teams. It's really tough to get a gauge of like where other groups are in the ladder. They've been solid. They were a top 10 defense. They're looking like they'll be a playoff team. But Beal, to me, you still wonder what direction he's pointing as he starts to make, you know, $40, $50 million a year here into this next contract. But if you are taking that route of the two we talked about here, that probably is the guy you're waiting on. I know Zach Lowe threw his name out there too when it came to Miami. So that'll be over the summer. Hero's got that poison pill. Tough to do anything in season with this group. And like you said, this is kind of a year for Miami where they're just feeling it out and looking at where they're going next. Let's circle back on the Celtics. It's tough for me to get much analysis from my guests here other than this team's just a monster and they're going to kill everybody and roll to a championship the way they're looking right now. Is that what we're looking at with this group? Because every night they come out and shoot 40-50% from three, 20-30 assists, balls flying everywhere. Tatum has 30-40, Brown has 20-30. And even though they're reliant on the three-point team, like no team really has been in history, they ride it to win after win after win. They've scored 120 in like three, four straight games now. They're playing some tougher competition. I don't even know what to say at this point with this group. It's just insane how this team that had so much stagnancy issues, even in that Miami series last year, is maybe the greatest offensive team ever to start a year.
Yeah, and you look at the way that they lost to the Warriors and what they were able to take away from that in terms of the ball movement and the screening and stuff like that. And it's completely transformed their offense. And give credit to Joe Mazzulla, too, with that, I guess, too. But it has to start with Jason Tatum. What's really impressed me about Tatum this year is he's just transformed. So he's obviously a great 30-point-per-game scorer still, and it's taken it to another level in terms of efficiency this year. But he's making his teammates better in a way that he never had before. He's a better passer, but he's also a really good screener. He's so quick to set screens for teammates and things like that. And you can't help but think that he watched Steph Curry do that for the Warriors, because Steph is one of the most willing screeners in the NBA too, in terms of high level scorers. And you kind of get the sense that he took that and said, I'm going to adopt that. I'm going to apply that to what I have on my team in Boston. And that's exactly what he's done. And you look at the way that the NBA is trending, and the more guys that you could put on the court who can score, handle the ball, but also can move and play make and screen for each other and find each other with passes and sort of read and react and not have to rely on set plays and things like that. That's where the NBA is going. You look at how the Utah Jazz had success earlier in the year. It was like defensively, they've fallen off a cliff. But offensively they were so hot because you just had five guys who could shoot and handle the ball and just knew how to interact with each other. After it was kind of a young veteran team that had been in the league for a little while. And that's sort of where I think things are going. And I think the Celtics are uniquely poised or in position to take advantage of that and sort of lead that new trend the way that the Warriors were, like in 2014, 2015, half a decade ago. The only thing I would say is there's that other guy in the Eastern Conference named Giannis. And he is such a singular force that I don't think that we're at the point now where we're watching Boston sort of roll through the league. I think it really is going to be Boston-Milwaukee. I think if you polled most people, they'd probably be split between who's going to come out of the East between Boston and Milwaukee. Chris Middleton's going to come back Friday night, it sounds like. I'm really interested to see what it looks like for them at that point. They really need him in the half-court offense. And then for Boston, what does it look like when Robert Williams comes back? He's kind of him and Horford are your best answers for Giannis. But, like, do you put Robert Williams back in the starting lineup? I know that Boston's been okay defensively. By defensive rating, I think they're better than the defensive rating shows on that end.
They were so bad last night. It was awful.
Yeah. But
I don't know what's going on there.
Or do you keep doing the thing that you're doing on offense, rolling through the league the way that you are, and do you kind of wait to unleash Robert Williams in the playoffs? I would probably go the other direction. I don't think I would start Robert Williams. I think I would just keep doing what you're doing and just sort of slowly let him work in. And then if you do see Giannis in the playoffs, just sort of like that's Robert Williams's role for this entire season, is just to help guard Giannis in the playoffs. Other than that, they don't really need him right now. So I don't know. I'll be interested to see what happens when both these guys come back.
Yeah. I think you set him the start. It makes sense. Ramp him up. Horford is just playing insane at that center spot, 48% from three. You want to keep playing five out. I think that's the style Joe Mazzulla prefers to play. So there's nothing wrong with making Luke Kornet Robert Williams off the bench. Like, that's just going to be an immediate upgrade. You can have him thrive in low dosage minutes. That's actually how he started his career in 2021, playing off the bench behind Tice. They had this absurd plus minus when he came off the bench in that role. So I don't think you're hurt at all by moving to that two center spot. And Horford's been playing a lot of minutes, so any amount that he can take off a Horford's plate is going to be good for them. But overall, they will have that stylistic choice, because every time they talk and you bring up the defense, it's all when Rob comes back, that'll help. But he'll probably need to be out there with the regulars playing consistently to have that kind of impact on them defensively. Because this defense is weird. I guess when you're flying up and down the floor, it's going to naturally hurt your defense a little bit. They don't force a lot of turnovers either. So that's been a difference from last year. But I don't really have a good feel for what's going on with this defense. Last night, they had a couple of games there where it looked better. And then last night, Hero and Bam were just kind of putting the guards behind them in the pick and roll every time and scoring at will. Not enough to keep up with Boston's offense. But that's the one thing you look at if they do get in a series with the Bucks or even someone out west who emerges as a power. That's when you start to question whether they're actually a championship team, is if they can get back to that level defensively.
Yeah, I mean, I watched the Celtics, and I don't think they're that bad defensively. I just think that they don't have to be good. And that's in the regular season, if you don't have to be good defensively, you just aren't. You know, when you had the Kobe and Shaq Lakers, those teams were like, there was that one year where they were like 20th in defensive rating or something like that. And then they got into the playoffs and started playing defense all of a sudden, and they were awesome. That happened the last year for the Miami Heat, 2014. LeBron, D-Wade, Chris Bosh. They were like 15th in defensive rating or something like that. And then the playoffs rolled around and then they were awesome defensively again. I just think with this team, if you don't have to get stops, like what NBA player wants to get stops? Like there's not a lot of them, you know? So
that might just be what it is. I mean, that little stretch where the Heat scored 8 straight in the first quarter, it looked like they just weren't getting on guys for their shot release.
No, there's definitely some of that too. You know, yeah. I think when you're playing 5 out and you're playing that pace, stuff is just going to get by you. There's going to be cracks when you're kind of playing that style. But, you know, like I said, it'll be interesting to see what happens when Robert Williams comes back and some of these guys have to lock in a little bit. But I still have confidence in those guys. Like you think about the personnel. Tatum's a really good defender. Brown is a really good defender. Marcus Smart's a really good defender. Derek White's okay. I think he's a little overrated, but he's fine on defense. Al Horford is a really good defender. Like, there's no reason why if they had to get a stop, they couldn't get a stop.
And to your point on the lineup thing, how can you sit White right now with what he's doing? That's really what's taking them to a different stratosphere, his shooting to start this year. And you're going to wonder what happens when, you know, Horford's not going to shoot 50% from three all year. White's not going to shoot 45%. Some of the numbers are just astronomical right now. But I guess when you're open, and I think they're like top five in wide open threes, you can shoot a pretty high percentage across the board out there. And that's what Grant's doing. That's what Smart did this month. And Brogdon, it's just ridiculous how much spacing and versatility they have, and Rob's just gonna add another layer to that. So we'll keep an eye on the Celtics over here. Wes, continue to have you covered on the Heat with Locked On Heat. There's a new episode out now. You can read them over on his Twitter page every time he's putting out work at WC Goldberg. Been great having you here a couple times on the show, Wes, and I think I'll be back down in Miami on January. At least I really hope I am.
Good time, bud.